Meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on April 25th, 2012. May we please have the roll call?
Mrs. Presti? Mr. Frieda?
Present.
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Sturgis?
Here.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Here.
And Mr. Ditko?
Here. I'd like to ask everybody to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just a few short comments before we get to the superintendent's report. I'd like to congratulate Rachel McLaughlin, Dan McTiernan, Kevin Malloy, and also John Higgins for being elected to the Clinton Township Board of Education. In addition to congratulating those four individuals, I would also like to thank Jill Santora, who ran as a candidate for a position on the board and was not elected this time. And hopefully she will continue her interest in the Clinton Township Board of Education and in the future will also consider running for the board again. And I would encourage anybody in the audience to give some thought and consideration to running for a position on the Board of Education. You know, there's no salary involved, but there is a great deal of satisfaction in serving the interests of the children of Clinton Township. I truly consider it a noble calling and something that is very worthwhile and one can get a great deal of satisfaction from. So if you're so inclined, please give some thought to candidacy for a position on the Board of Education. So again, congratulations to those four individuals who were successful, and hopefully we'll have a fantastic 2012-2013 school year. I'd like to turn the meeting over at this time to our superintendent of schools, Dr. Clark.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming this evening. First thing I would like to report on is our enrollment report. We are at 1605, and there have been no significant changes in our numbers over the past month. I do have one suspension to report at the middle school. I also have harassment, intimidation, bullying, HIB reports to make. There were five investigations at Round Valley School. They were all determined not to be HIB. There were three investigations at the middle school. One was determined to be HIB involving a suspension. Two were determined not to be HIB. The next thing that I would like to do is share a presentation with the community, and I see some staff members here. And the board on school choice. Okay, I have a new clicker, so it may take me a minute. But what I'd like to begin by saying is One of the reasons that we're doing a presentation on school choice is that as part of my initiation this summer, as I started as a new superintendent, I met with different members of our community. And many of them brought up to me questions about the school choice program. And so I've been doing some research over the course of the school year and gathering information about the questions that people have asked. Please note that I do have a sheet that you should all have that was at the front where you can write comments, and if you have additional questions, I would appreciate your giving them to me. If we don't answer them here at the meeting tonight and you think of something, if you could please fill these forms out and leave them at the front before you leave, that would be great. So what is school choice? There is an Interdistrict Public School Choice Act. It was in 2010. And it allows students to go to a school outside their district. Students apply to a participating school. The Clinton Township Schools are a participating member of the School Choice Program. I also added in a quote by Christopher Cerf, who is the New Jersey Commissioner of Education. And he calls this program win-win for families because it provides choice to their children and is a win for districts because it allows them to maximize their enrollment. So this is one of the questions that I've been asked. What does Clinton Township School District receive in state aid for the school choice program? We receive $1,283,160 for what we budgeted as 102 school choice students. You will notice that we actually only have 88 school choice students enrolled in the entire district. I was concerned about that when I saw it because my first thought was that the state was going to be taking money away from us. However, they have told us that once they budget that money, that's the money that we get for that school year. Because they're anticipating that there's some movement over the course of the school year. We did have more than 88 students enrolled originally for this year, but through the course of the year, people move, change schools, things happen. And so there is a difference. They say that they're not taking the money that we're supposed to keep it. I did a chart with our business administrator about how many students we have, where they come from. So you can see here as you review it, the students come from really all over the county. Bethlehem, Bloomsbury, Bridgewater, Califon, Clinton Public, Flemington, Raritan, Franklin. You can read the whole list there. And we get more students clearly from a place like Lebanon Borough or Franklin Township and Bethlehem. Those are our largest groups of students. But they do come from multiple places. What grade levels are the school choice students in? And you can see here, we do not take preschool students in the school choice program. However, we do take them in every other grade level. One of the things to note, because it will come up later, is that in eighth grade, we have 7 students who will be graduating the program. One of the questions I was asked was, do the school choice students we take use up our support program space? And by support programs, I mean things like literacy support, basic skills. They actually don't. And I have to tell you that I came at looking at the numbers for school choice, thinking school choice might not be a great idea because they would use up our resources in great numbers. That is actually not true. I proved myself wrong. So we have less than 10 school choice students across the whole district that even participate in any way, shape, or form in any of our support programs. And if you look at the Clinton Township students, our in-house, in-town students, we have 118 who participate. So less than 10, 118. Has the program increased the percentage of students who are classified in special education? I heard a great deal about this. There is a perception that it really increases our special education costs to a great degree. That is actually not true. I can't tell you the exact number of school choice students who are classified as special education students because the number is so small, I would really be divulging confidential information. So what I can say to you is that it's less than 10% of the school choice population. We have, in Clinton Township, we have 18.4% of just our Clinton Township students who are students classified in special education. The state average, by the way, is around 15.5%. I found out this week that although Clinton Township's number is higher than the state average, it seems to be in the county that it is high. So Hunterdon County does have a higher than state average classification rate. And that is so in all the sending districts to North and Voorhees, which is interesting. If you take the school choice students and add them to the Clinton Township students classification, it actually decreases the rate for Clinton Township. There were some additional questions that have come up. So what would happen if a school choice student was accepted into the district and then needed extraordinary services, all right, in an area like special education where they needed an out-of-district placement? Would we have to be paying for that student? And no, we got a confirmed answer from the state that the home district would actually have to cover that. They would take the difference of what is the state pays to us, which is $12,580 per student, and the rest would have to be covered by the home district. So do we accept every student that applies? No, we actually don't. Last year, we did not accept 6 students. And that was because we did not have programs available for them. Can you screen all the students applying? You really can't do that. The way school choice works is that students apply. As long as you have a program and you have a space for them, you would accept them. Students who you do not have a program for, you can deny their application. Can we add more students to the 88 we already have or the 102 we have budgeted for? Or could you totally eliminate the program? Yes, you can add more students. You can add more, or you can decide that you're just going to keep the 88 you have and zero out, so to speak, your spots. No, you can't eliminate the program entirely. You must keep the students that you already have within the program. There are 7 school choice students graduating. And I also listed the number of school choice students that we have in each building so that you would be aware of that. This presentation will be on the website by tomorrow. So if you want to reference it, have any other questions, you can do that. Do we provide transportation for the school choice students? No, we don't. But we do provide for those who are on a regular bus route in Clinton Township, and we charge the cost back to the district. So that's an additional cost for the district or the sending district. Most parents actually provide their own transportation, but the sending district would pay all transportation costs for school choice students. One of the questions that I've been asked a lot is how can the district actually make money, so to speak, gain revenue, if our per pupil costs might be higher than the $12,580 that the district receives from the state. And the per pupil costs for Clinton Township are not actually higher once you start subtracting your fixed costs. For example, you need a principal in every building. All right, that would be a fixed cost. You need a phone system in every building. That would be a fixed cost. The business administrator and I actually worked out some numbers. Heather, do you want to share some of those numbers with us so that we can give a broader perspective to everyone?
Sure. The first number that usually the public will look at is the total spending per pupil, which actually is part of the Taxpayer's Guide to Educational Spending. That number includes all business that's done in the district. So it would include our transportation costs, our debt services costs, and that number for 10-11, and we're always a year behind because the state calculates that information based on the prior year's audit, is $17,393 per student. It looks really high because what that includes, it's our debt services calculation, it's our transportation calculation, it's the pension and benefits calculation that the state pays for on behalf of the TPAF employees that we have in our district. In addition to that would be equipment. For example, we put a new phone system in one of our buildings. So that is all calculated in the cost per pupil for every student district-wide. The next number that you want to take a look at is in our user-friendly budget that's posted on the website, there are cost per pupil expenses there as well. And you will see them for the year audited, the revised year, and then the future year within the budget. If you take a look at the specific lines, you will also see that in the comparative spending guide or the taxpayer's guide for education. And those numbers can further be reduced for those fixed costs that Dr. Clark talked about, which would be your transportation costs again. It would be your administrative costs, which isn't only salaries and benefits, but it would also include your telephone systems. It includes auditing fees. It includes attorney fees. So there are a lot of costs in there that aren't necessarily all associated with salaries. In addition to that, another number that we back out of that, out of the number, would be facilities and operations of the plant. We have to maintain the buildings. We have to have custodial and maintenance staff support the buildings. So those types of things, as well as heat and electricity, you would back out because a school choice student or 88 students wouldn't necessarily impact substantially the amount that we pay for each of those things. So when you remove those types of fixed costs, if you will, from our per pupil cost, it brings us well below the $12,580 that the state is paying us.
So, you know, what we gain revenue on every student that we accept. Another question I'm asked a lot is, if we did not have school choice, could we close the school? Would that work for Clinton Township? Not at this time. Even if Clinton Township did not have the school choice program, you could not yet close a school building here. If you were to eliminate the school choice program, I want to give you a little example of what it might look like, all right? And I tried to think of all different things as I was playing with these numbers, and whichever way I mapped it out, I couldn't close a school yet. Let's use Patrick McGarren as an example. And I love Patrick McGarren, but the reason I'm using it as an example is because that's the example in the school that most people in the community have asked me about. I don't know why, but they have. So I'm going to show you how it actually wouldn't work, all right? You'd have to divide your students. You have 269 grade 2 and grade 3 students at Patrick McGarren. You'd have to divide them up into different schools, all right? If you close that building, you have to disperse those students into different schools. The most logical way to do it is you would send grade 2 students to Spruce Run, grade 3 to Round Valley, all right? You immediately see that you have insufficient classrooms. Because right now, all those classrooms are being utilized in the buildings as is, all right? So you would have an immediate problem in where do you put those children, all right? So if you wanted to put them in the children in the buildings, no matter what, all right, you want to shut down that school, no matter what, you would have to significantly increase your class sizes. And for those of you who've looked at that strategic plan that the district did a couple years ago, it was very specific that the community did not want to have large class sizes. That was not what Clinton Township wanted. So you would have to do that to make it work to start. But then let's take that another step further, because that's not where we would end the conversation. You'd have to think of another idea, all right? That one wouldn't work, but is there another idea that would work? So the first thing that came to my mind is, all right, we have fourth, fifth, and sixth grade at Round Valley. If we wanted to put third grade there, could we move sixth grade out and up to the middle school and have enough room at Round Valley to have grade 3, 4, and 5. That would add 168 Clinton Township students. Let's remember now that I've eliminated school choice, all right, under this premise. I no longer have those 88 school choice students. I took them out of the equation. I'm just using Clinton Township students. So I'd have 168 of them that I would add to the enrollment of the middle school. We have another problem. We would have to significantly alter the building to make additional space there. Which would mean that to start, we'd have to use what's called substandard spaces. You'd probably have to make some. If you know the middle school at all, there are some
courtyards.
Corners. There's some like little spaces, gathering spaces at the middle school and off the main hallways. And let's say you kind of somehow divided those into some classrooms, they would become substandard spaces because you wouldn't have the right square footage for students. It wouldn't be approved by the county as a regular space, classroom space. It would be substandard. That's the way they would define it. So in order to do that, we'd still have to significantly increase class size at the middle school. And we do have some concerns about that because I don't think that we want to have 35 kids, 35 at least, at the middle school if we were to do this. Then if you look at what would happen to Spruce Run, right? You now have Spruce Run larger than it should be. You have the middle school larger. By enlarging those Spruce Run and the middle school, you also increase significantly the student population and your some staff population that you would have to move there. There would be no way to manage that without adding some additional administration. So that would be an additional cost as well. You would also have to, what I'm going to call mothball, Patrick McGarren School. You can't just shut the doors and forget about it because it would fall down and you don't want to do that. You would have to mothball it temporarily until you could decide what other options you wanted to explore. So do you want to sell the building? Do you want to give it away? Do you want to share it with the town? What do you want to do with that? So you'd have to look at your alternative options and mothball it. So right now, no matter which way I move and cut and divide up kids and spaces, I don't see it being workable at this time, even if you eliminate all your school choice students. So it's not educationally sound, it's not physically sound. I think it's not a good thing for the community. However, I do want to say that demographics are changing a lot in our state and probably nationally. We do know that birth rates are falling. That's a fact. Excuse me. And we know that they're falling in communities like ours. We already are seeing numbers dropping for the future. So until, and hopefully soon, the economy comes back and people start having children again, those birth rates are going to be coming down. School choice or no school choice, we will probably have to make some decisions about our schools for the future. So what do we do with the increased revenue that we've been getting from school choice? It's only been 2 years, so we haven't a long history of this. And most times when you're looking at the impact of a program like this, you look at what's called a longitudinal study. So you look at the impact over the course of years for a length of time. We don't have that length of time to look at. So we can only look at a couple of years, and right now we know that we're not using up resources in a great amount on school choice students. So we still have revenue. The revenue is supporting fixed costs that are incurred by the district. That if we didn't have that, we would be increasing taxes, most likely, or cutting programs. We've also reinstated the co-teaching model, which is we've hired additional teachers, and you can see that there. It's a program that actually benefits special education students and general education students, so that it's a good thing. It is a well-researched, well-supported program that our children learn better when we have a good co-teaching model and teachers who are working together for the good of all students in our classrooms. So it's a program that Clinton Township has history with and had to cut back on and now reinstated for the benefit of the Clinton Township students. Additionally, we added a behaviorist and two health and physical education teachers. And a fifth grade general education teacher. We've also supported some enrichment activities at the middle school. One of them in particular is the Gettysburg trip for enrichment students that's been supported by this program. And I believe the board is looking at approving tonight. Additionally, we hired 2 full-time and 1 part-time literacy coaches, basic skills support people. So over the course of time, we lost some of that co-teaching model. We lost some of the basic skills literacy support that we had in the Clinton Township schools that I think contributed to making it such a great school district. School choice has allowed us to bring those programs back. What happens to the school choice students after they finish at our 8th grade? They actually go back to their home districts or their home district high school. North Hunterdon is not a choice school. So they don't move on to the high school unless they belong to a sending district. So the board does not have to vote on school choice this evening, but they do have some decisions to make in terms of giving direction to the superintendent. And so that is what I'm asking of all of you tonight, to consider these options. The first option is we can zero out on our openings. All right, so that means that, for example, when we lose those 7 eighth graders, we would put in 0 on the school choice page for what openings we have in 8th grade. All right? We would also put 0 in the other grade levels and not accept more. We would take those 88 students that we have, subtract 7, we're down to 81, and that's what we would keep. That's one option. You can also open only the amount of seats we are losing from the 8th grade students. So, for example, you could fill in those 7 students. And clearly you can fill them in any grade level or configuration we want. I'm going to recommend tonight that Heather and I have, our BA and I have looked at this extensively and tracked who's moving and where and what'll happen. And we want to spend some time with our administrators in terms of solidifying where the best place to put our openings is. But wherever we put them, it has to be a careful balance. And it has to be a careful balance for this reason. In order to maintain that you're gaining revenue from the program, you don't want to overfill. Because if you overfill and add too many students into your openings, assuming you get them all, and you may not, as if you overfill, then you'll wind up spending that revenue on additional teachers and sections of classes, all right? So you have to maintain carefully a balance that will keep positive revenue coming in for the school district and not losing money, as some districts have experienced, who maybe opened too many seats or were not careful about where they were opening the seats. You can open the same amount we budgeted last year. We budgeted 102 openings last year. We started with numbers around, was it 99? And then we got movement through the course of the year. So the odds are, even if you open 102 seats, you're not going to fill those 102 seats. Although, today I looked at the applications that came into the district. The deadline is December 3rd. We have 21 applications that have come into the school district. If you look at that number, brings you right up to around 102. So that's what we have. I think there are more that will come in because people did not, with the power outage and the storm, people weren't kind of on top of these applications as they normally are. So it's taking them a little longer to get them in. but we're starting to see them roll in now. Clinton Township is a very popular school choice district. It's a good district. People like it. People want to be part of it. So it is very attractive. What I do want to say to everyone is Hunterdon County has opened up many choice districts this year. So there is a lot more, I'm going to use the word competition, although I don't feel we're in competition getting school choice students, but there are a lot more available seats for people who want to place their child in a school choice program. I want you to remember, as we're talking about opening these seats or not, to keep a couple of things in mind. One is the amount of fluctuation we had over the last school year. So we had a lot of back and forth in those numbers. And the state, the reason they give you the money that you assign a number to is because they believe you're going to have a lot of fluctuation over the course of a year. They expected that. The other thing that we need to remember is keeping ourselves in balance, right? And it's not easy. This is not an exact science. So we may think we have exactly the right number, and it could be off. So we're gonna make our best educated guess about how this would work and where we should put these students. While you're thinking about that, I'm going to finish up this by saying that, you know, we've had a number of things happen in Clinton Township. We have changing demographics. We've had some failed budgets. We've had cuts in state funding, as many districts did. And we lost a number of important instructional programs. School choice did allow us, as a district, to rebuild some of those programs. And I believe that helped rebuild some of the instructional strength within the district. We've updated curriculum. We've purchased texts and materials. We've budgeted for professional development. There's a lot that we've been able to do without increasing tax revenue, with keeping it flat. So it is an important program. We have some decisions to make about it, and I'd like to open it up to questions. Board first.
Yeah, I've got one. The 21 applications that have come in so far, by grade, do we know how they're distributed?
Yes, I do. I know the exact grade distribution. Okay. There are 3 applications in kindergarten, 2 in first, 2 in second, 2 in third, 2 in fourth, 4 in fifth, 1 in sixth, 4 in seventh, 1 in eighth.
Did you say 1 in eighth?
I will.
Did you say 1 in eighth?
1 in eighth. I will also say that if you look at the way the numbers are moving through the district, sixth grade is a tight grade. It's a large grade, right, Mrs. Hammond? So it's a very large grade. It's probably not a grade I'd accept a lot of choice students into, because that might throw the balance off. And even without the choice students, I think we might have to add a section there. We'll probably go down sections in a couple of other grades, so I want to be careful of those grade levels too.
Excuse me, Dr. Clark?
And these would...
Sorry. Quickly, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but let's say for the sake of argument that 1, 2, 3 years from now, Trenton decides to eliminate school choice. Are you aware of what would happen to the monies for the kids already in our district? Would they phase it out or would they cut it?
Well, you're asking me to predict what Trenton would do, and I'm not willing to go there. I don't think, all right, I believe that Governor Christie is a supporter of the Choice Program, as is Commissioner Cerf. So assuming they were reelected, and I think that's, you know, that's probably a big assumption, but assuming that the Governor Christie was reelected in the state, I think he would probably keep school choice as part of his programming. I think they're worried about funds. The storm has certainly eaten up a lot of state funding and monies. Could they eliminate some of the money? Yes. It would not surprise me if 2 years from now that those 102 students that we only had 88, they came back and said, oh, you know, we're not going to give you the money for those students. They could pull that out 2 years from now. They've done that kind of thing before. So could it happen? Yes. Would I predict it? I really wouldn't even go there.
It sounds like we have the ability on a year-over-year basis, assuming we stay in the program, though, to sort of at least to some degree predict a balance. The goal here being not to stress the administrators and the teachers and have to increase administrative costs, right?
Right. I think, yeah, you are trying not to do that. You're trying not to increase any of those other costs. That's why it's, right now, to me, it's a delicate balance. We have revenue production from this program. I think it's a program you want to watch very carefully as it moves forward, because it could be that your demographic numbers drop so much in 2 years that you wouldn't possibly make up all those numbers in school choice. I wouldn't recommend to you that you increase your school choice numbers to 150 or 200 students. I don't think that would be a wise thing for the district to do, taking into consideration your concerns about what might happen with the state in the future. I think that would throw the balance off too much. Maybe sticking around 110 would be a safe number right now, based on demographics, grade levels, and the fluctuation numbers that we've been seeing in the program.
Great, thanks.
There's also a chance that they can, in the future, reduce the dollar amount that they give to you. It may not always be $12,580. That could be a possibility as well. I mean,
the state can change anything at any time, as those of us who've worked in education for years know.
That's more of a concern for me, that they lower the dollar amount and they probably do away with the program. And now what happens?
It absolutely could happen. Right. I don't think it'll happen next year.
No.
Because I think we'd get a little bit more notice of that, because that would be a big impact on a lot of districts. But could it happen in the future?
Sure.
Yes. And it's why you have to watch this program very carefully.
Okay. Thank you.
And in looking at the program, we've brought in these 80-plus students. If the funding goes away from the state, which is always possible, what is our commitment to those students if we lose school choice funding?
Well, if one partner pulls out, then it seems to me that you have the right then to pull out. All right? I would be worried for the students because, you know, that's our motto, all right, children first. So we have to think about that, how we would handle that so that it was good for our kids. But technically, legally, you probably would be absolved of that obligation as well.
Dr. Clark, what is the state's motivation for the program? Is it consolidation?
I don't know that it's consolidation. I suppose it could be. I think they're looking at a lot of things. I think they're looking at it as an alternative to charter schools. And frankly, it's a better alternative to charter schools because you have more restrictions and benefits to students. Charter schools are a little bit liberal in terms of what the parameters are, but could they be looking at consolidation down the line? I think they certainly want to do that in the state of New Jersey. So anything that contributes to that goal, it's a possibility. I think a realistic assumption would be, yeah, maybe.
Is there anything you want to add?
No, I'm just saying that if the state decided at some point to change the program or stop the program, I think they would obviously, in amending that law or the developing regulations, would have to try to build in there some guidance as to what happens. Currently, when you're a choice student, and as long as the program is still in existence, those students remain with you, and that is an obligation. You can't at some point say, oh, we don't want these choice students anymore. But I think that would be completely different if the program, as a legal entity, were to change. There would be some part of that law, I think, would explain what would happen.
Let me introduce, this is ML Fabian. ML Fabian is one of our board attorneys, and she's here advising us this evening. So thank you. Yes, I think there would probably be some amendment to the law and maybe a sunsetting of it in some way.
Any other questions from board members?
I have one.
Kevin?
You mentioned the fluctuation that we've experienced. And this year it was, we signed up for 102. We wound up with 88. So the fluctuation will always be down. It can't be up. Because if we register for 102, we'll never get 103.
Well, it could happen. It could happen. But yeah, most likely it would be down because where we saw the fluctuation was from, frankly, we had a fair number of divorces that impacted movement where families were splitting up, moving to different towns and places, and that had an impact on us. There is certainly a trend that is increasing in our society, so I would expect that that would stay as is or increase, the fluctuation issue, yes.
But like this year, from when we registered to what we actually wound up providing education for students, it was to our advantage, 176 grand.
Yes, it was to our advantage to have a higher number accepted, that's correct.
And roughly, just for thinking about the revenue associated with choice, for every 20 kids we admit, it's about $250,000 inbound.
Any other questions on the part of the board before we open it up to the public? Michelle?
After looking at this, did you have a recommendation of the number of seats that you thought we should open for the 13-14 school year?
The VA and I talked about this extensively over the past few weeks, and the number that we've come to is 110. We think that's reasonable, and the way, if remember, it's not just the number of students you accept, it's that you spread them out, you disperse the students throughout the district, because you don't want to tilt it one way or the other. So you want to disperse it fairly. So the 110 is not an additional 110, all right? It's inclusive of the 81 students we already have and will retain. So we're just adding to those in what we think is a reasonable number spread across grade levels. Yes?
I have a question. If you open it up to get to 110 and you provide invitations, and then someone reneges and decides that they don't want to come, can you then extend another invitation? Or do you have a deadline that prohibits you from doing that?
They would have had to apply.
Right, if they applied.
Right, if they applied, I believe you can open up that spot.
Okay, thank you.
Also, I hope if we do go the 110 route or 102 or whatever route we go, I hope we talk about the allocation of the funds, of the revenue, and how we go about it.
Wait a second. I have to come closer. I can't hear.
I'm sorry. I'm talking more about if we do go 110 or 102 or whatever number we end up with, that we also look at the allocation of the revenue.
Yes.
And by that, for example, should we go the 102 times the 12,580? I'll use that as an example. It's 1,283,160.
Right.
And maybe we can set some sort of mini budget for, say, for example, a percentage towards X amount, like 40% towards classroom education, 40% towards facilities, and maybe 20% towards tax relief to reduce the general tax levy. You know, we sort of a mini budget, and we can, I think it should be a public vote as well by the board for accountability.
Well, I think what you have is that you'll have a budget. We're putting together a zero-based budget this year. So we're putting together that budget. The entire board is going to be part of that. We're going to have hearings. I think that everything goes on the table. All right?
Right.
The choice money goes on the table as well, and the board can make some decisions about how they want to allocate that. There are multiple ways they can do it and multiple reasons of why they might want to do it in different ways. And the percentages that you're talking about could certainly be considered.
And those are just examples.
Right.
But at least we have accountability, we have transparency of where exactly the school choice revenue is going and how it's going to be used. Very specific.
It'll be based on need, I'm sure.
I think that's something that the board has to consider as they're doing the budget. Mm-hmm. I think it all has to be on the table.
I think we also need to spend some time discussing what our philosophy is for the school choice program that we're in. It has sort of evolved over the past 2 years that we've been in it, and I'm not sure that we might all be on the same page for why we're in this program, why we would want to move to 110, or why we might want to move to a lower number, but I think that would be something that would be valuable for us as a board to discuss and set down our philosophy for what we're going to do with this going forward so we always have it to go refer back to.
I also want to be clear about something else as you're talking about this. The 110 number that we're playing with, that is not going to keep the school district even, all right? It's not going to mean that you will take in as many students as you're losing due to demographics. That's not what that number will do. It will keep a balance. You won't lose students dramatically, all right, so that you won't be moving large numbers of staff off your rolls dramatically. But you will have a class or two that you may still lose despite the fact that you're taking in 110 school choice students, all right, because those demographics are variable right now, although I still see them coming down, and my guess is that the estimations of declining birth rates are probably even, those numbers are probably off. They will probably decline more than we think they'll decline. So I expect that we may lose a class or two just because of that. You're not going to be able to make up all of those children that you're losing. You'll have some consolidation there.
I'm sorry, I have one more question, if I could.
Go ahead.
Regarding the student screening process, it says if a designated school choice district may only refuse a student if there is not a program or appropriate placement available for them within the district. Do we walk a fine line on, let's say, a classified student? Could it be said that they can say, well, I think there is a program or appropriate placement for my child?
You have to look at it that, all of these children, right, have a right to an education, a free and appropriate education. So you want to be aware that you have the right program for all of these children. Classified or not classified, it really doesn't matter. What the law says is that if I don't have a program, all right, let's say I was accepting preschool students and I didn't have a preschool program, right, or a preschool
I don't have a program, classified, not classified, it doesn't matter, all right? You can't discriminate students. So that's what you have to be aware of. And that's why I say you have to be very careful about when people are asking me about screening students, all right? You're really just looking at do you have a program for them or do you not have a program? Right.
I just want to make sure it's not a fine line that we're walking with that language, that's all. It's clearly not discrimination, I got that, I just...
Right. Yeah, I think what the law is trying to do is to make you aware as a school district that you really can't discriminate and say, because a student has disabilities, you will not accept them. Right.
Okay, good, thank you.
Okay. Anybody from the public have any questions? Yes.
If you have, Dr. Clark, why don't we have them come, since everything is being recorded, have them come up to the mic. And I would ask you to please state your name and address and direct your question to Dr. Clark.
Hi, Andy Ferguson, Myrtle Avenue in Lebanon. I did note that Lebanon had a high number showing up in school choice children. And you said that your places open up, of course, at the end of eighth grade coming out of the program. Do the Lebanon kids not come out of the program after sixth grade because there's a shared resource? Lebanon kids are coming to the middle school anyway? Or are they still considered choice students?
That's a good point.
Do you want to answer, Heather?
We did do an analysis on this because that was our question exactly. We do have a send-receive relationship with Lebanon Borough, so that when their students graduate from sixth grade, they do come into our program in seventh and eighth grade as tuition-based. However, our question was, if we brought a Lebanon Borough student into our district in fifth grade as a school choice student, do they go to tuition in seventh grade? The answer is no. They are our student, and they remain in the school choice program even though they're from Lebanon Borough for seventh and eighth grade. And that seems to have been some confusion. Up until this point, right now it's only two students that it impacts, that were previously a school choice student, went to seventh grade, did not become a tuition student because they're our student, they're a Clinton Township student at that point. However, if they are a sixth grade student graduating from Lebanon Borough's program, in seventh and eighth grade, they are tuitioned to Clinton Township.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
It took us a while to figure that one out. Thank you for
That's
asking.
A good point, John. That's a good point.
Hi. Hi, Nick Orcadellis. Thank you. I'm going to try to confine my questions to numbers that either have been calculated or could be calculated. I don't want to get into the philosophy of school choice. How long can a child, once a child comes into the district in school choice, my understanding is we have to keep them until they're done. Is that correct?
Yes.
So the longest number of years that a child that we'd be stuck with would be how long?
Well, it would be from kindergarten through eighth grade. So okay. You're talking 9 years.
Okay. So do we have an 8 or 9 year plan for dealing with the kids we've already taken in other words, doing projections into the future as far as what our costs are, so on and so on? Is there some sort of a plan that's been put together?
Well, we've been, the VA and I have been looking at this and trying to map out as they go through. I don't think that we've looked at all of the costs for those all the way out 9 years.
So we started the program, but we didn't put together a plan at that point. The other question I have has to do with our facilities plan. You mentioned, and I agree with you, the population drops are probably going to be bigger than we're projecting. What does our facilities plan, at what point does our facilities plan project that we would have a big enough drop in student population that we could actually close a school?
You would need another, I'm going to guess at this, so don't hold me to it, but you'd certainly need over 150, I think, students to drop, but so that you would have enough space to close a building. Let me just ask, Mr. Sturgis, we were talking about this earlier at our facilities meeting, and there was a study done a while back, right, that you had talked about?
We had looked at it a few years back when we were doing the long range, the strategic plan, about 3 years back. And we had documented, but I think at that time it was in the 120 to 150 range, and our enrollment was similar. But it's something that we should look at annually, the demographic projections, what they would be with choice, without choice. And I think we're required by the state to look out for purposes of closing or opening a school. It's either 3 or 5 years. We have to look out that far in our LRS.
So when we take these kids in, we really, what we're doing is we're adding kids. If we're looking at our population dropping, we wouldn't be able to close a school because we're adding kids, because we're stuck with them for 8 years. That would be a concern of mine. Another question I have as far as numbers go.
Can I just answer?
Sure, I'm sorry.
There is another consideration to that, though. All right, we're seeing a lot of fluctuation in these school choice numbers. So we started with a higher number over this past year, and we're seeing that number drop. So I'm not sure that I would say to you with any certainty that 8 years out, we're going to have the same number we started with.
Okay.
All right, because of that fluctuation that we're seeing, that kind of surprised me, frankly.
Have we had to add extra teachers to accommodate the extra 88 kids or any other kind of staff?
That's why I was talking about the balance. Right. Because when you're spreading out the students over the whole school population, right, we really haven't, except for, I believe there was a fifth grade teacher. The numbers in the presentation,
I don't need specific details. I'm just asking,
okay,
have we added additional staff, either teachers or other kinds of staff, to support the 88 kids that we've brought in?
I'm not sure we've added them to support those 88 kids. We've added additional staff to support programs that predominantly support the CTSD kids. So when you talk about the co-teaching model and all
what
that.
What I'm really getting at is, has our class size gone up or has our class size gone down as a result of bringing in 88 kids? If we're not adding staff for the 88 kids, then I think it's reasonable to assume that our class sizes have actually gone up. Yes, it has.
That is correct.
Can you tell me what the average across the district has gone up?
The average enrollment and projected for next year is between 19 and 23 students per class.
Okay. So there is a cost to us as far as what happens to our kids who are in the classroom. There are more kids in the classroom vying for the teacher's attention. So that brings me to my next question. Dr. Clark, you referred to...
Well, you might collapse those classes if you didn't have that many. Let's say you had a considerable lower number, right? You may not run a class, you might not run a fifth grade class with 15 students. What you do is you collapse your sections so that you'd have larger numbers in those classes to try and stabilize it some.
But our average number of kids per class have gone up, which brings me to my question. Dr. Clark, you referred to positive revenue from the program. Can you tell me what our positive revenue per school choice child is? In other words, what's our profit per child?
Yes. Well, I mean, if we look at the fixed costs, I can tell you from that perspective.
Well, no.
We have somewhere around, 2,000, we figured,
per child, 1,700,
2,000.
So we're making about 1,700 per child. So what happens to that money?
Some of those fixed costs that
No, but wait a minute. You guys said before that fixed costs are kind of taken out of...
No, it goes to... It's not fixed costs, Heather. What it is it goes...
Because then it's not profit.
It's actually going towards what the district decided to spend the money on in terms of additional staff and some programs, texts.
What I'm trying to get at here is, as far as parents and taxpayers are concerned, what is the benefit to us of this program? If it's increasing class size, that's a detriment to kids in the district and to parents in the district. If you're earning a profit, but then you're spending it, that's not a benefit to taxpayers and parents in the district. Now, you could argue that you're spending more money to raise the quality of education, but you could do that anytime. So I really urge you to consider, if you're committing us to an eight-year term, and that 8 years renews itself every year as you add more kids to the program, I'm really concerned that I'm not hearing you say that you put a plan together last year when you started taking these kids in, looking 8 years out. Now, an eight-year plan is, you know, I don't know how much fantasy that would be. Any one of us in business knows that in 8 years, 3 years, 5 years, it's tough to do that. But in the absence of working through a plan like that, I think you're treading on really dangerous ground, adding kids to the mix even at this point, when we don't really know what our facilities plan is going forward. Clinton Township, as far as I'm concerned, because of dropping population, should be closing a school at some point in time. And what Dr. Clark just said is we'd need, what, 100 and how many? 200
I'm
how many kids?
I think we figure between 120 and okay. 150 kids.
Okay, so we're about to add 110. If we don't add 110 and we lose 120, 130, we'd close down a school. Now, I'm not celebrating closing down a school.
That
but
depends
what I'm,
on your grade level.
I'm sorry?
You're assuming then that those kids, those 130 kids, would be enough that they would be in a particular grade level to close a school. If you spread them out across, then not necessarily are you going to be able to close a school.
Well, what I'm saying is if we didn't take those kids in, we would get to our end point of being able to close a school sooner. But again, that
you would have to lose a certain amount of kids in a certain age demo that you could collapse an entire school building theoretically.
Right.
Okay. We would have to lose 130 kids in, let's say, second and third grade to shutter Round Valley.
But that's assuming that you can't shift kids around when you get to a certain population point into other facilities, which I would imagine you would have to do anyway.
We did talk about that, but if you start shifting kids around before you lose those demos and you've projected 5 years out. Don't forget, you have to project this 3 years out. You have to prove that over the next 3 years, the demographics of your township aren't going to shift back. Now, understanding your point.
That's a good point. That's a good
yeah.
point.
But you also have to now factor in, if we just lose the 130 and start moving around, we could end up increasing the township's cost by having to put in more teachers and administrators in the other buildings.
This is exactly what I'm getting. Mark, what you're describing is absolutely key and critical. This is information that the public needs to have, one way or the other. But it needs to be in a written plan that we can go and read. And it really needs to be laid out, whether you have to hire a consultant or whatever you got to do. I think you owe it to us to be able to give us a plan that says, over the next 3 years, 5 years, and 8 years, here's what we anticipate is going to happen. And if these things happen, then this will probably be the outcome. This is where our choices will be restricted. It's where our choices will be expanded. We don't have that. And as a taxpayer, my kids don't come to the district anymore, but I'm just as concerned anyway. My concern is if we can't look at that as a community, then it's really hard to come in here, and with all due respect to Dr. Clark and to our business administrator, them talking about it and trying to hash through it is a good thing. But if you don't have a plan and the two of them are trying to figure it out on the fly, then I don't know where we're going. So I would really urge you to maybe put this next year on hold, put together a long-term plan, and again, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be exact. Things are going to change. Put together a plan that outlines exactly the kinds of that. Those are some fine points that you were just discussing, which I think a lot of people would be interested in seeing if the community is going to support this kind of program. So those are the kinds of things that I'm concerned about, and I try to come back to the numbers. So thank you for your answers and for walking through this.
Thank you, sir.
Any other comments from the public? Okay, thank you, Dr. Clark.
Thank you.
Before we get to the public comment on agenda items, we have a action item, which is action item 13, SU-003. Can we have a board member make that motion?
So moved.
Second.
Seconded by Maria. Any discussion on the motion that the Board of Education accept the enrollment suspension and HIB report as presented by Dr. Clark? Any discussion at all? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call vote.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
And Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Thank you. We're now at the public comment section on agenda items only. I would ask that anybody that would like to address the board, please state your name and address and limit your comment, question, or concern to 3 minutes. first on agenda items only. All right, we'll move right into the first recognition of the public then. The same guidelines would apply. I would ask you to state your name and address and limit your question, concern, or comment to 3 minutes.
Hi, Nick Corcadillis again. Over the past year, this district has been through a lot on the subject of ethics, ethics accusations, ethics violations, ethics rules, ethics laws. I think everyone is keenly aware that ethics have been an issue in Clinton Township. And above and beyond ethics, there's been the matter of the prosecutor finding the district in violation of Open Public Meetings Act laws. So everyone, I think, has this in the front of their minds. And anyone who doesn't, I think, is making a big mistake. There's a matter relating to the recent election that I think is very serious and the board, I think, needs to deal with as a body. During the election, one of the people who ran as one of the 3Ms, I believe, clearly misused an official position for an unwarranted personal benefit. And I'm talking about Dan McTiernan. Mr. McTiernan is a school board member, but he's also a commissioner in the Clinton Township Recreation Department Soccer League. On November 2nd, he sent an email out as an official act signed by him as the commissioner of U15 Girls Soccer, aka Booty, to a mailing list of over 60 people who participate in the program, which they pay for. And it was an official communication talking about the soccer program and what was happening after the storm. Mr. McTiernan closed his email by saying, "See you Saturday at Foran," meaning Foran Field. "Remember to vote on Tuesday, and for the school board elections, vote the 3Ms. Now, Dan, I don't know you well, but I've talked to you before. I know that you've been an executive in human resources where regulatory compliance is a big issue. It's a big part of the job. I'm sure you've paid attention to all the issues that have arisen on this board. Putting out an email like this, according to New Jersey statute, is a violation. You're not allowed, you're prohibited from using your official position to secure unwarranted privileges or advantages for yourself or for others. Now, you're sitting on the school board, we're dealing with kids. Telling kids that, oops, it was a mistake, and I did something as an official that gave me an unwarranted benefit which the law prohibits. Or even in soccer, telling kids, I cheated to win. And I look at this, maybe it sounds trivial to some people, but it's not. There wouldn't be a law against it if it weren't illegal and it weren't a problem. So Dan, I want to suggest to you that you do the right thing. It's an awkward situation, but it's pretty ugly. It's in writing, and I'm going to provide a copy to the board attorney. So you won by violating an ethics rule. I want to suggest to you that the right thing for you to do is to resign from the board, and the right thing for you to do is resign from the soccer league, because there are kids involved that we're trying to teach lessons to. I'm sorry to say this to you. I don't enjoy coming down and discussing these kinds of things, but I watch the legal issues, and I watch what the board does.
Mr. Corcadillis, your 3 minutes are up. Mr. Corcadillis.
In the current climate, I think you know what this means, and I would expect the board to conduct an investigation, Mr. Dinkoff.
Thank you, Mr. Corcadillis. We have any other members of the public that would like to address the board? Seeing none, I'd like to move on to the report of the school business administrator.
In the auditorium, and all future board meetings will be held in the auditorium.
Before we get into the committee reports, there are a number of action items as part of the business administrator's responsibility. We have action item 011 through 014. Heather, would you go over each one of those, please, and then I'll ask a board member to move them.
Action item 011 is to approve the minutes of October the 24th and our special meeting on November the 6th. Action item 12 is to approve the board secretaries and treasurer's report for the period ending September 30th. 13 is to approve line item transfers for the September 30th period ending. 14 is to approve the secretaries and treasurer's report for that period of time as well.
Thank you. May I have a board member move those items? So moved by Kevin Sturgis. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Michelle. Any discussion on items 011 through 014? May we have a roll call vote?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes on 12, 13, and 14. On 11, yes for October 24th. And I abstain on the 6th because I was absent.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
And Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Thank you. Committee reports, we'll start with the Facilities and Finance. Kevin?
Okay, the Facilities and Finance Committee met today before this meeting. We discussed the hay barn, the budget calendar, and payment on the roof for SRS. Unfortunately, as I'm sure everybody here knows, we had a total loss of our barn on the CTMS property during Hurricane Sandy. That was very unfortunate. We were sorry to see it go down. Right now, we're working through. We filed a claim with our insurance company. We've put temporary fencing in place just to secure the site. And the school staff are working on pursuing the claim with our insurance company in a matter that best benefits CTSD. On the budget calendar, you'll see on tonight's agenda on FF077, there is a calendar put out there for public meetings relating to development of the 13-14 budget. These activities start on December 3rd with a public budget 101 session, which will be led by Dr. Clark. Facilities and Finance Committee will also begin our committee meetings with Dr. Clark and with Heather to develop a budget that we'll recommend to the board later in the budget season. And we'll be reporting on our progress with development of the budget at the public meetings. The Spruce Run roof, that was a large capital project that was undertaken this year. We're happy to report that that roof project is complete. It's been inspected, it's been signed off, and we're making final payment to the vendor, and this project will be closed. We have 15 action items to move tonight, FF064 through FF078. I want to bring your attention to a few. FF068, we're authorizing the BA to go out for an RFP for an architect of record. FF069, we're authorizing the BA to go out for an RFP for before and after school programs and kindergarten wraparound program. And FF077, which I just mentioned, is the budget calendar for 13-14. With that report, I would like to move FF064 through FF078.
Thank you, Kevin. Do we have a second on that?
Second.
Second by Mark. Any discussion on any of the items, 064 through 078? Seeing none, may we please have a roll call vote?
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
And Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Thank you. Personnel, Michelle?
Yes, thank you. Since our last meeting, we have not, in fact, had
an official personnel meeting. However, that doesn't mean that personnel work wasn't done, and much I have to thank Dr. Clark and Heather Spitzer in that regard. First off, we have hired a secretary to the business administrator. That was number one. Unfortunately, we have, we will accept with regret the resignation of our accounts payable clerk. That is Terry Lemon, who's been with us for a significant period of time. Therefore, Dr. Clark and Heather have been organizing that personnel search for us. So, additionally, that's really, those are our major events that have been going on. As far as our motions, we're going to remove or withdraw motion 106, or action item 106, and then we will add on the agenda action item 117. With those amendments, I would like to move action items 103 to 117, and withdrawing action item 106.
We have a motion. Do we have a second on that motion?
Second.
Second by Maria Grant. So we have action items 103 through 117, excluding 106. Any discussion on any of those items?
I have one question.
Go ahead, Dan.
Action item 13 p.m. 109. In there it says that the substitute bus aides are at $15 per hour. I'm just curious, what was the rate for the 2011-2012 school year?
The same.
The same? Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call vote.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Presti?
Yes.
And Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Thank you. Rachel, action items 07, policy and curriculum.
Thanks, Jim. The Policy and Curriculum Committee met on November 13th for a very lengthy meeting. We had a lot of agenda items to cover. Some of the highlights of what we talked about, we got an update on the new teacher tenure reform law, EE4NJ. One thing to highlight on your agenda is action item 13PC021. The state requires that the district form an evaluation assessment committee for the new teacher tenure reform law. And we have a number of administrators, as well as one board member and several teachers representing all schools, which will be on that committee. We did have a discussion about the school calendar. So it's not on tonight's agenda, but I wanted parents to be aware that we are working on the school calendar. We're aware that North Hunterton High School has adopted their calendar for next year. We know parents are anxious about that, and we hope to get that together by the next board meeting. In addition to that, we spent time reviewing the core value bylaw. Unfortunately, one of our board members was unable to attend one of our final discussions in August regarding the bylaw. So we took the time to bring it back to committee. And for the most part, the bylaw remains the same. There were some minor wording changes. So the draft that you have before you is the final draft that the committee is putting forward. There was one word change on the very last item. It previously had said embrace new best practices, and we are changing that to embrace best practices. And when I move those action items, if anyone would like to discuss the bylaw further, feel free to do so in discussion. We also have some field trips that we are going to be approving tonight. The ski trip is paid for by the parents, but we still have to approve that the students are eligible to go on the trip. And Dr. Clark earlier tonight had referenced the trip to Gettysburg. One thing we had talked about last year was the possibility of sending additional students on that trip since it was so valuable. So it's one thing I'd like to bring back to committee next month, is approving this tonight, but then talking about how we might be able to expand the program. So with that being said, I'd like to put forth action items 13PC017 through action item 021.
Thank you, Rachel. Do we have a second on that? Second by Kevin Sturgis. Any discussion on any of the items 017 through 021?
Quick question on Gettysburg. Dr. Clark, if memory serves, the trip is approximately between $1,500 and $2,500?
I think it's closer to $2,000. Am I correct about that, Heather?
I think it was projected this year at $2,480.
Okay, and there were 50 students who went on, approximately
correct.
50 students went
right.
on that trip last
correct.
Year? Okay. I'll bring up another item since I do understand that there was, in coming up with this bylaw guide, I understand that in April at our first meeting, as we laid out our board core values, one of the items that was personally important to me was the concept that we not disparage other board members and their ideals. It's come to my attention, I'm not a member of the PNC committee, but it's come to my attention that phrasing sort of came under scrutiny, not necessarily for the sentiment, but rather for, if I have this right, more or less the flow and the syntax of the document itself. So I would willingly put out there tonight, if in order to keep all of these items and I've spoken with some folks about this, how does under respect, if you look at page 2 of your bylaw guide, at the top, the third bullet on the top, respect, instead of not disparage other individuals and their ideas, how does refrain from disparaging other individuals and their ideas ring to people?
Sure.
If that's something that the board can get behind, I think we've got a good document. I'll defer to you, Rachel, as chair.
I also emailed Rachel. I guess she put out an email asking for input, and I gave an email to the PNC committee. I'm assuming everybody got it, Michelle, both Michelle's and Kevin and Rachel. I had two sentences I put in there. I put, do not dismiss other individuals or their ideas, or always embrace individuals and their ideas. So those are just, I think both are more softer in their message, but that's just something I threw out there. I didn't know if anybody got any feedback or any of the PNC committee got a chance to look at it.
Michelle, do you want to comment?
Well, I was the one who had brought this point up particularly, since everything else in the document is crafted in an action we wish to take, except for that one item, which was crafted in a verbiage of something that we didn't wish to do. And we struggled very hard to get the point across that we wanted to make in a positive light. Kevin, I think your solution there is pretty good, and we can go with that one. From a procedural point of view, then do we, since, did we move these yet? I'm sorry, I've lost track. Then we do need to make a motion to amend that at this point?
I think we do if we need to make, if we're changing the language. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's valuable to have the discussion before we decide if we're going to amend it.
Yeah. We did second this.
Does Kevin second? Yes, okay. It's on the floor. We would need to amend the wording within the bylaws in order to be able to accept it. Or you could just say as amended, based on the wording you'd like to change.
All right, so your recommendation, Kevin, is to change it to refrain from disparaging other individuals?
With the committee's blessing.
Is there any particular reason why, you're honing in on that? What was the basis?
I think it's very important that the board refrain from disparaging other individuals and their ideas.
Do you think we have in the past?
I do.
Okay. Rachel, is that acceptable to you as chair of that committee and who made the motion?
I want to get the input from the rest of the committee. So I heard Michelle, Kevin, and Michelle Gresty.
That's fine by me.
That's fine.
Okay. So then Kevin needs to, does he need to motion to?
Do we need a motion?
To take back the amendment, right?
We can accept it as amended, correct, Emily?
Yeah, I think you should read the new language so everybody's clear what you're voting on.
The change in the language would be under respect on
third bullet.
Page 2 of the document, first paragraph, third bullet, would be changed from not disparage other individuals or their ideas to change it to refrain from disparaging other individuals or their ideas.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions by members of the board? All right, let's have a vote on that then.
Fine. Mr. Freda?
Sure, let's go for it. Yes.
I'm sorry?
Sure, let's go for it. Yes.
What are we voting on?
We're voting on the amendment.
Sure.
Yes.
Just that one item?
No, I'm sorry.
No, we're voting on everything.
You're voting to approve all of personnel, which would be PC
policy and curriculum.
017.
Policy and curriculum.
I'm sorry?
Not personnel, policy and curriculum.
Sorry. PC.
Policy and curriculum.
17 through 21, where item number 17 has been amended. Mr. Freda?
Sure.
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
I would vote yes on action items 17 through 20 and abstain from 21.
Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Cresti?
Yes.
And Mr. Dinkoff?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Communications? Maria?
At this time, we don't have any items to move. However, we have met since the last board meeting. We worked with Dr. Clark and Ms. Spitzer on the school choice presentation and the handout that everybody received this evening. We also talked about two letters, actually. One letter from Mr. Dinkoff as board president. That was given to the staff that worked tirelessly throughout Hurricane Sandy. Those folks took this district and put it on their shoulders and made their buildings on their own personal time and came in to make sure the buildings were safe, that all processes from a technology perspective were still continuing and things of that nature. So one letter went to those folks. And then the teachers gave up 2 days of NJEA time to come back to school for 2 full contact days with students. And there was a letter from Mr. Dinkoff to the staff thanking them for their dedication to the students of the district for making that sacrifice. We also talked about a survey to send out to all community members, including staff, parents, and those in the community that don't have children in our district, that would ask them what types of information they would like to see in the Clinton Township newsletter. So we have gone through the survey, approved the survey, and I'm working with Ms. Spitzer right now to find a survey company that's more affordable than the one that we wanted to use in the beginning. How quickly prices change, so we need to adapt a little bit and find something a little bit cheaper. In accordance with the survey, we also have put together a letter to parents, to community members, and to the staff, alerting them that the survey will be available, and that will be sent out when we do release the survey. We have a press release to go to the press as well to let them know that the survey will be released to the public and everyone can participate, and we'd like to encourage everyone to participate. We will put information of the availability of this survey on our district website. We will do an email blast to parents. We will drop the survey off at seniors' meetings. We will go to the Health and Wellness Center and to the library and provide copies of the survey there as well. There will be a letter to the editor. We are going to explore potentially sending out an email blast, if North will give us permission, using their email contacts. And we're going to ask the township as well if they will allow us to put information on the availability of this newsletter on their website also. We will also, we didn't get to talk a little bit about the construct of an advisory board that would consist of community members. So board members, staff, and community members. And at the next meeting, because we ran out of time, we'll talk more about the constructs and the structure of a community advisory board as well. We will also talk a little bit about developing a strategy to get more folks registered onto Twitter and Facebook too, because that's a very quick way for us to reach them as well. And they use that every day, all day, Facebook and Twitter. So we're going to try to talk about strategies to get more people signed up to do that, again, so that we can share information quickly to the community. And that's all I have to report right now.
Any questions for Maria on communications?
Maria?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this. Dr. Clark, I think, does. How many Twitter followers do we have right now?
158. Last time I looked.
We got to get that number up.
What was the question?
How many Twitter followers? Look, for those here and those listening at home, I've got kids in the district. Twitter told me when school was closed right away during the storm. If you don't have a Twitter account, I hope everybody in the audience realizes that
Dr. Clark is on Twitter and you can get a hold of her. 158 is not a lot for our superintendent.
Make your kids follow there.
Get the news hot off the presses. So it's a great place to go.
Any other comments from Maria? Seeing none, we'll move on to old business. Is there any old business that needs to be brought up before the board?
Yeah, I feel I need to make a comment. I wasn't planning on it. Based on a public comment we heard. But I feel I have a duty and an obligation to, as an elected official, to inquire about this. A little troubled by it, I guess what I heard before. Caught me off guard. But, Dan, I guess I'm going to ask you if you would be so kind as to inform us as a board, your fellow board members.
I'm going to interrupt here. A matter has been brought before the board. It's been turned over to the board attorney. I really don't think this is an appropriate time for one board member to be asking another board member questions about the election. So I'm just going to assert myself as board president and say that it's been turned over to the board attorney. It'll be looked into, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, so I was just looking for an explanation. Okay, no problem. I'm a little troubled by that. I'm confident that you as board president will look into this, I guess, and give us some sort of direction or
and
guidance.
There'll be feedback to the entire board.
Okay.
There will be.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any new business that needs to be brought up before the board?
Can I bring up a quick old business comment before we go that? Aside from Twitter, I just want to – I didn't know if communications was the right place to do it, but Dr. Clark, Ms. Spitzer, the communication during the storm was phenomenal. The text messages, the Twitter updates, you guys were so on top of it. And Maria, you guys get some of this credit too. I just think a tip of the cap is in order. You guys were so far out ahead of keeping parents, as a parent, not as a board member, as a parent, you were so far ahead of keeping parents informed about when the schools were going to be open, when there was going to be delayed opening, the great work that you were able to do with the teachers to get us back to school during the convention time. So I just think you deserve a little bit of praise. So job well done. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You were, said in a letter to the mayor, and to the town council, they were in communication with me every day to keep me informed as what was going on in the town. When I was concerned about road closures, I talked to them if there was a way we could move the power companies and tree services a little faster to get things open up. for our parents and community. They were very good about including us in all of that, and they invited me on the Saturday before the storm to their OEM meeting, and I was able to participate in that, share some ideas and concerns that we had, and they gave me some information that helped in talking to our staff and preparing our buildings. So we didn't have any major impact on the buildings themselves. So our staff has been fabulous, and the town really worked with the schools. So I really appreciate that. It helped us keep everybody informed.
If I may echo what Kevin had to say, I heard from a lot of parents who really appreciated in that time, and this part is my spin on it, in that time where there was a lot of things going on and a lot of uncertainty, to know so far in advance there's not going to be school, you could tell your kids, you could plan and move forward. I did get a lot of comments on how much they appreciated that.
Great, thank you. New business? I need to go back, and I guess it would be new business,
okay,
and ask for some direction on choice numbers from the board to the superintendent. I have an administrative meeting tomorrow, and the administrators are going to be talking about where we would distribute those numbers. So I would like to ask for some direction about that.
Before I ask for input from board members, again, I would ask you to repeat what your recommendation to the board is. You indicated there were, I think, three different choices that we had, at least three different choices.
Okay. So. Okay. Choice one would be to zero out seats, meaning that you do not take any more students than we already have. So we have 88 students currently with 7 graduating. So we would zero out those numbers and not take any more additional students.
Okay.
Another option would be to take just the 7 students you're losing as graduating students in eighth grade. Probably wouldn't take all 7 in eighth grade. We would disperse them across the district for some balance, but you could fill those 7 in. The third option would be to stay with the number you have now at 102. That's the budgeted number for this current school year budget. So you could stay with that number, understanding the fluctuation, that you might not get 102, it might be considerably less as we had this year. The fourth option would be to increase the number to move to about 110. And that's really filling in a little bit more than you had as an option before with 102. And they would be dispersed throughout the grade levels.
And as our chief school administrator, educational leader in our district, what is your recommendation out of the four choices?
I would say that you should strongly consider the 110 number. I think that some of our public has made some very good points in terms of school closures and numbers for the future. However, by increasing it to 110, what you do is you don't have a quick, move down in terms of immediately cutting so many classes, and possibly you wouldn't close a school this year, but you might do that in another year or so. You might be doing that anyway, frankly, because of the direction that the demographics are going in, but you might want to slow it down for the good of the school community and programs.
Okay. Any additional discussion by the board members? Any questions for Dr. Clark? Or any concerns board members would like to raise at this point?
I have two questions.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Do we have a projected enrollment for 12-13?
Yes, I believe we do. Heather, do you have the number?
For 12-13, that's what we're
in. Oh, I'm sorry, 13-14. Yes, you are correct.
13-14, right?
Yep.
If we were to move all of the students we currently have forward and include in that the 21 applications that we've already received, which brings us to 102, and still have seats open, we have a projected enrollment of 1514, so 1514 students, which is a decrease year over year of 101 students.
Okay, thank you.
And does that include applications for kindergarten?
We currently at this moment have 3 applications for kindergarten.
And he's asking school choice. He's asking...
Not just school choice. I mean, in general, 1514 includes next year's kindergarten students.
Yes. Okay. We're keeping it relatively flat to where it is. Okay. But we have 12 kindergarten students moving to first, school choice students moving to first, and only 3 backfilling them.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt, Michelle. Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries. My next question is, if we set a number tonight as a guidance and we start looking at how those numbers are panning out, can we at a future date say, you know what, I think we're getting a little high in one area or another and back off that 110?
I think it'll probably happen anyway naturally based on our experience, but I'm not sure you can do that. I think you can go into the state website and change your numbers at any time, but you have to tell people by the end of December whether or not you're accepting them.
Okay.
Once you tell them you're accepting them, then you're taking the chance that you're filling that number. All right.
Okay.
They may not accept by that time. They may have changed their mind. I've heard that people are applying to multiple school districts this year because so many across the county are school choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that for a fact.
Are there still 2 rounds of acceptance? There's a round at the end of December, January time frame, and then is there another one in the spring, or was that only the first year of the program? I can't recall.
I think that's only the first year. I think we do an acceptance for the major number. There might be some openings later on that we could choose not to open and change that number, but your major list is from that first opening.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Clark, option 1, which was the zero out option?
Yes.
So the zeroing out would be the 8th grade and kindergarten. Is that right? We would not refill the 7 seats in 8th grade?
Correct.
And
but we would, yeah, that's correct.
So then, and then kindergarten, there would be a new class coming in. There was 12 this year. Would that be 0 next year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to put dollars to this just for the board's consideration. Option 1, which is zeroing out 8th and K, by my calculations, it's a drop, because don't forget, we applied for 102. So you're down to, you're not applying for 102, you're applying for
81. 80,
well, 88 minus 7.
Right.
That's 81, then minus 12. Because you're not accepting for kindergarten.
No, 12
are
moving to
first.
No, just minus 7.
No, it's 81.
It's 81.
Yeah.
But
what would happen is we wouldn't accept any new students into kindergarten. So you would have a 0 there. So theoretically, it is a 12 additional 12 reduction. You would move out.
All right, I got. Well,
yeah.
That's
33
student reduction.
But you still have 81 students.
You're right. There wouldn't be a benefit.
You still have 81 students.
We get paid on what we have.
Correct.
We would get paid on 81.
Well, we would get paid on what we're projecting for next year. So if we project 81, that's all the seats we would open, that's what we would have to budget in next year's budget.
So that's a drop of 21 students.
Right.
Correct.
So if it's...
Times 12, 580.
It's 264,000. If we drop from 102 to 81, it's 264. So option 2...
A decrease of 264?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
264,000.
Option 2, which would, we would add 7 more for the loss of the 8th grade kids. We'd add back 7.
Mm-hmm.
Our enrollment would be 88. That's a loss of $176,000.
Why?
Because compared to 102.
Okay.
Because we picked up the delta between 88 and 102 because the state paid the 102. Option three, which is flat at 102, if we kept it at 102 by adding in those kindergarten kids you had mentioned, we'd be flat at $1,283,000. And option four, which would be 110, which would be increasing headcount by eight, we would pick up $101,000. So we'd be at $1,384,000 in option four, the 110 that Dr. Clark had recommended. So it's negative 264, negative 176, flat, and plus 110. Plus 101.
101. 110 or 101?
101.
And the probability of 120 coming is not likely.
110.
110, sorry.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So we should.
This year we got 86% of the kids. So you don't know exactly what's going to happen, but.
But with more schools opening up, it's liable to be a little more competitive and less likely that we'll get 86%.
So at the same percentage, if 86 actually attend, the pickup would be 193. And I know that's just strictly a financial way to look at it, but that's what I'm presenting. It's strictly a financial way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. So the percentages were, I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
Well, while I do want people to focus on that because it's easy to get lost in the numbers, it's 1.3 to 1.4 million. Most of you are familiar with what we use that money for. I think. If you're not, please ask. But it's easy to lose sight of, you know, these are kids. So my take on it, aside from the financial considerations, is once they come in, there are kids. And these discussions are somewhat tough if you're one of those kids or one of those families, because it's not strictly a financial analysis, but those are the numbers. But my personal take on it is once the kids are in here, we should treat them as if they live in Clinton Township until they leave.
So the point that I was started making before, Kevin, before I cut you off, so taking that 86%, if we use that percentage on the 110, I get about 94 children that would be enrolling as opposed to 88. So we would be up six overall from this year.
But that's if we went to 110.
That is correct. That is correct. If we dial up to 110 and the percentage of actual enrollment remains the same at 86%, then we end up 94 children enrolling as compared to 88 children this year. And that would be spread amongst the nine classes. Right. So it's six children over nine classes.
I mean, ideally, you open the sections where you have the best ratios, and you close the sections where you have the worst ratios to try and level it.
Yeah, we're absolutely. Already, Heather and I already mapped that out. I can already see, even if you went to those that 110, you're still going to close some sections.
Okay. What do we need on this? Do we need a formal vote? Do we need a consensus?
No, we need a consensus of direction for the superintendent.
Okay. Any other discussion?
I can give you my opinion right now. Based on what I've heard tonight, based on the proposal, and with the understanding, Dr. Clark and Ms. Spitzer, that we continue to look at this up to and including maybe some long-term demographic projections that bake into this, I'm prepared to accept your recommendation for 110.
I think the 110 is the way to go. We're not the only game in town anymore. We have to make sure that we support the programs we've put in place. We can't lose that opportunity. And so I support your recommendation of 110.
Yeah, agreed.
Michelle?
I agree. I think the 110, since Dr. Clark and Heather have looked at this carefully, they've made the recommendation. I think that we've put some important programs into place, and I would really hate to see a backslide from those important programs and the things that our population and Clinton Township residents are expecting now from our district.
And I think this affords us the opportunity to continue on those programs that
Dan.
Benefit us.
I would completely agree. I'd go with the 110. I don't think we'll get it, but that's the way to go to support the programs.
Michelle.
I'd like to piggyback on something that Kevin said, that taking a look at where we're going for the demographic studies, as well as what our philosophy is here on this going forward. I do think, as I said before, we need to get it down on paper, because as we get to the point of discussing this, it's easy to get distracted in the numbers. Looking at your projection, and even if we did get 110 kids, our enrollment is projected to decline slightly. I'd like to try to keep that as flat as we can. That was one of the main intents, so I guess I would support the 110 number.
I'm sorry, you would support the 110?
I do support the 110 number, yes.
Mark?
Yes, 110.
Okay. You have your direction, young
Rachel?
Lady?
I'll weigh in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Listening to everyone, I'm in agreement, but I also think that by not choosing to accept Dr. Clark's recommendation, it would be more of a detriment to our students because of the decrease in services, mm-hmm. the potential increase in class sizes, which will probably already happen anyway with the collapse. So I think we need to keep it up, your recommendation.
Okay. So as a board, we're recommending you go to 110. Okay. Any other new business that needs to come before the board? Seeing none, we'll move on to the second recognition of the public. If there's anyone else in the audience that would like to address the board, this is your last opportunity. Please come forward, state your name and address, and limit your comment, question, or concern to 3 minutes. Seeing none, we are not scheduled to go into executive session, so I will accept a motion to adjourn the meeting.
Motion.
So moved by Dan. Do we have
second.
A second?
Second.
Second. I think Rachel, I think. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Meeting is adjourned. Meeting is adjourned.